You can listen to The Professional Left on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, or at our website, professionalleft.blogspot.com, where you can also contribute to this podcast. There's a PayPal button at our website, or you can mail us a letter and or contribution at P.O. Box 9133, Springfield, Illinois, 62791.
This is the podcast for March 31st, 2017. It's not safe for work.
Recorded live from the set of Fox News' new primetime show, Lock Her Up, starring Mike Flynn, Oliver North, and the mortal remains of G. Gordon Liddy, it's The Professional Left with Driftglass and Blue Gal.
Happy Blogiversary, Driftglass.
Thank you, Blue Gal. Thanks.
It's 12 years ago today. We're recording this on March 31st.
Yes.
12 years ago today, Driftglass started his blog and with a little sample post.
I got kicked out of the news blog. They said, you can't be here no more.
And that was back in the day when Blogger would go down all the time.
Yes, yes.
I remember that. But that's how old school we are.
Halo Scan was the comments thingy, and I got kicked out
because
Gilliard kept saying, look, dude, you write really well, and you need to be in a blog of your own, so go away. So
go away now. You have to go do that. He kept bringing your comments up and posting them as actual posts.
He did. He kept doing that.
You know what I want to get you for your blogiversary, dear class? I want to get you some Triffid's flowers. For that special someone on their special day, Triffid's flowers. Triffid's flowers. Delivery is free, but you won't like it.
I'm watching Sean Spicer lie his ass off on television. It's really bad. It's really, really bad. Well, this woman who was on Chris Hayes last night, or one of those shows last night, she's the one who said, who asked her colleagues in the intelligence service to spread information around to keep it from being destroyed by the Trump administration.
Oh.
And it was really clear what she was saying was preserve documents, because they're going to come in here and they're under investigation and they're going to start, you know, burn bagging everything that we've collected. And that would be very bad. And yesterday or the day before, the White House got all shitty and said, see, it's another Obama administration asshole who during the transition was spreading information around for political purposes and blah, 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 blah. And she was on the Chris Hayes show or one of the shows last night saying, I left the Obama administration in 2015. I was advising my colleagues in the intelligence area.
Yeah.
That these people are not to be trusted and that they need to copy things and keep them, because if they don't, it's going to fucking disappear.
Yeah.
And we'll never see it again.
And it's procedural to do that. That is the point.
Yeah. And you Sean know? Spicer was just saying, it's interesting that you all want to talk about, you know, these charges that have no support, but you don't want to talk about all of Hillary Clinton's ties to Russia and all the calls she made to Vladimir Putin and selling uranium to Vladimir Putin all by herself.
Which didn't happen.
Didn't happen. And it's interesting that you won't talk about your colleague, the Obama administration woman who spread all this information around and blah, blah.
Like, yeah.
She already pre-debunked what you just said.
Yep.
And they're all in this room looking at this guy going, I can't believe it's just this obvious kind of, I don't know how to deal with this. You're fucking lying. And if they had any balls, they'd get up and leave.
Yep.
They would just get up. I'm sorry. I'm not going to sit in a room with a lying sack of shit like you.
This is a waste of my time. Yeah.
You and Ala Pundit can have the rest of this interview, but it's just it's an insult to my profession to sit in this room with this sack of shit.
Yep. Well, this morning there was another announcement along these lines of the Obama administration actually giving to the Senate this, again, these generalized things of you gave to the Senate. Well, who in the Senate did you give it to? And let's dig down into the details of the story. Whether the Obama administration gave documents to the Senate, knowing that or expecting that the Trump administration was going to rip things up.
Right.
What the Obama administration did, according to reports that I read this morning, is they made an index of all of the Russia documents that they felt were pertinent. And they numbered these documents and gave the numbers and the index to the Senate Gang of Eight, the highly classified, top security senators, and who are, you know, the ones who get to see the top classified information, just these eight people.
Mm-hmm.
And they gave them an index of the documents to say, here they are in number. It's like, as I said on Twitter, it's like saying this book has 251 pages. So if you get a book that has 220 pages, something's missing.
Right.
And so they gave them, and the index and the titles of the documents were not classified. This is really important. It's just, it's a piece of paper with the numbers of the documents and a heading for them.
If,
you know,
if it were on your computer, it'd be called a FAT file.
Right.
It's, the file it's, allocation it's, table. It just tells you what the document is and
the front page of your bullet journal. It's what's in it, and here's the numbers of the pages, and that's it. And that, but even that was just given to the Gang of Eight. Okay. So this is just entirely appropriate that they would do that. You know, here are the documents we have in the White House. When you ask for them, I mean, that's, to me, that's the assumption, not the assumption that because if I was investigating something or if I knew that I was leaving a job and that the next person coming in was likely to be investigated about the stuff that I had at my desk.
Right.
I would want the investigators to know, here's what I have. Right.
Exactly.
Not
exactly.
Just not the not charging anybody with anything. Just human nature. And, you know,
CYA. Well, CYA.
Here's cover your butt. Exactly. So you it. But to me, it really is. How, what nuggets can we find to feed to the Fox News viewer?
Right.
To say, aha, you see, Democrats are meanies.
Right. Well, and Spicer's also going, just doubling down on, nothing Nunez did was wrong.
Right.
Everything was appropriate. Everything was fine. He wasn't, and just, it's just gibberish. You know, he was led onto the campus and your chronology is wrong. And I don't think what you're saying is right. And we don't just let people wander around. And, well, everything you're saying is bullshit. And it's all like really
provable
well documented.
Bullshit. Provable bullshit.
But it doesn't matter because no one, none of the meatheads who believe in this guy like as the risen Christ are going to look up anything in the New York Times. Or they're just going to read his Twitter stream and jerk off to that and then get excited about what they read on Hot Air and Breitbart and the rest of them. That's all they're going to hear. And they're not, and they're going to stay in that hole because outside that hole is scary.
Yeah.
So it just, it literally doesn't matter what Spicer says. It doesn't matter that he lies his ass off because everyone knows that the liberal New York Times and the liberal Washington Post are out to get him. And that's all they're going to see and hear.
I wanted to point out something that I wrote today.
I'm not sure that's appropriate, really, using your podcast to promote your writing. I'm not sure how appropriate that is.
Happy blogiversary, by the way.
By the way, just so our back are for people who've come to the podcast, you know, in the last year or two, like Pod Save America, who I know listens to every fucking word we say. My lovely wife and I met because we loved each other's writing so much.
Yeah, that's right.
That was our first intimate, tentative contact across the internet.
That's right. We knew that the other person could write.
I married a smart writer and artist and who's politically savvier than me. So I'm delighted. I'm delighted when she actually can find time between the 20 other things she does every goddamn day. So did you write anything interesting today, honey?
I did. Well, I just wrote up. It's not actually a deep piece of writing. It's more of a transcript. But Clinton Watts was on Morning Joe this morning. Clinton Watts is the hero of the week. He's the guy, former FBI agent, who testified before the Senate Intelligence Committee yesterday, Thursday. We are recording on Friday, by the way, because we didn't know who was going to quit or resign or
or which specific lies Spicer was going to tell.
Yeah.
On Friday, because Friday is his big dump it all, you know. Leave a big steaming loaf and then leave for the weekend.
And you said, you call him Tardy Spicer.
Yeah, Tardy Spicer.
He was very late today, and Carolee over at Kirks and Liars said, yeah, he's chewing gum really fast and wishing he was dead.
Yeah.
But Clinton Watts, a former FBI agent, was on Capitol Hill testifying and said, you know, this is what you call Russian active measures.
Right.
The way that Russians manipulate public opinion and data and get people confused and basically create chaos.
Right.
And you can tell that this is happening and why it works because Donald Trump and his campaign and his White House are using these techniques. They are quoting from Russian media. They are quoting from these places. And why would, and so today on Morning Joe,
they're quoting from articles that are wiped in, you know, days later.
Right. Right.
You know, they're quoting from places like Sputnik, who put up articles specifically to be cited and to create chaos, and so that the wing nuts will pass them around like dirty postcards.
Exactly. Exactly.
And then they delete them.
And then they delete them.
And this is what Donald Trump, your president and mine, is his very source of information on purpose.
Well, that's the point that was made on Morning Joe this morning. And the thing is, the big thing that they will not talk about is Morning Joe's culpability in a President Donald Trump. Right. But they did say that Clinton, I guess he goes by Clint. Clint Watts said.
Yeah, that makes it easier. A lot of Clintons in this equation.
Why would you look to Russian propaganda to go against your American opponent? That's just against everything the Republican Party has ever stood for.
Yeah.
And Joe Scarborough said, you know, most of this for the Russians, isn't it just dumb luck that they've stumbled onto a presidential candidate that was stupid enough to pick up their fake news? But he said that.
You mean your close personal friend, Donald
aren't
Trump?
Aren't you a member of Mar-a-Lago? I mean, come on. You certainly spend Christmas there every year.
You bore him on your shoulders for a year. You gave him, you know, $1 billion in free publicity,
yes,
Joe.
Yes, you did. Yes, he did. Mm-hmm. So, Watts said, but that's the point of Russian active measures. It's to sow confusion inside your enemy. But I loved what Casey Hunt did, because Casey Hunt, you know, is on the Hill working
every
reporter.
Day. Yep, she is.
And she asked this guy, Watts, what do you think the media should be doing here? How should we cover this? And I just thought, oh my goodness, what a lovely, refreshing question to ask.
Yes. Yes.
And Watts
How's this
said,
play
look,
in Gloria?
No. If I was in the media's shoes, I would look at the Twitter feed that has real Donald Trump on it. If you look at the accounts, the outlets, these very small fringe outlets that are pushing conspiracies directly at the president,
yep.
I think you're going to see where a lot of that influence comes from. And it's not just the Russians. There are others trying to influence them as well. But they know they can get into his decision cycle with any conspiracy that he will bite on. So
right.
If they put out a conspiracy that is very personal to his ego, such as the Trump Tower wiretapping claim, then you've got the potential that he'll fall for a conspiracy. We've seen it happen before. And then he says, a little later on, they're asking him about incidental collections, right? He said, look, I've done incidental collection. I've done wiretaps. I've done electronic surveillance, which is what it is today. It's not wiretapping. And incidental collection happens basically every time you are looking at electronic communications. You will find names of people who are innocent or names of people who may tangentially be connected to the White House or to something. You know, at these levels of power, a lot of people are just talking to one another or about one another.
Right.
And so you will always, even if someone's in the news and you email about them, that's incidental collection, right?
Uh-huh.
So,
exactly.
You know, Sean Spicer could email, I just hate that Hillary Clinton. Well, that's incidental collection of Hillary Clinton's name in whatever you would get from his email.
If he emails his Russian backers, I just hate that Hillary Clinton. She's so mean. That would show, or they would email him back. Then that would be picked up, incidentally collected, because he's talking to a foreign national, probably up the list of suspicious characters.
Mm-hmm.
And in that case, you get swept up along with anything else you might. But that's the point. It is all noise.
Right.
It's just fucking noise.
Well,
that
but
gets
here's the point that Watts made that I thought was really important. And so important on so many different levels. He said, look, so you go through and you minimize that. So people that are innocent aren't, you know, discovered in it, but you're going through looking for data. You're looking for proof of wrongdoing, right?
Right.
But here's the but. If you're going through looking for a political point, which is I need to prove a claim that I've already made and I don't know if it's true, then you're pulling all sorts of data.
Right.
This incidental collection that doesn't have any merit to it is going to be pushed away. We just did just the reverse of that. They went in and dug for a little nugget of gold to justify a tweet.
Right. That's what your government did over the last 3 weeks.
Exactly.
Your government turned itself inside out mm-hmm. to try to find a way to rationalize the lunatic ravings
on Twitter
of an asshole,
yeah.
a lying asshole on Twitter.
Yeah.
That's how dictatorships work.
Yeah.
You know, the old joke about Stalin and Beria.
Uh-huh.
Beria, who I'm sure I'm mispronouncing, I believe used to run the KGB.
Okay.
And Stalin invites Beria in and says, Beria, I've lost my favorite pipe. Go find it. And Beria goes out and comes back in the next day and says, Comrade Stalin, we've incarcerated and tortured 10,000 people and they've all confessed. And Stalin says, oh, Beria, never mind. Call it off. I found my pipe. And Beria says, but they've all confessed.
Mm-hmm.
And Stalin says, well, then have them executed.
Yeah.
He is Donald Trump losing his pipe and then turning the entire government inside out to find it for him when it was in his back pocket all along. Except it's not as benign as
Except
that.
Except there was no pipe.
There was no pipe. He leveled a felony charge against yep. the former president of the United States
right.
in public on Twitter repeatedly.
Yep.
And yep. and doesn't have the balls to admit when he's wrong because he's a lunatic.
Yeah.
He is a
yeah.
pathological liar who can never admit he's wrong. And that's yeah. why they elected him, because he is the Republican base.
Yep.
He's a racist, lying lunatic who gorges himself on conspiracy theories, lies constantly, and then when he gets caught lying, blames everybody but himself. That, in my experience, is the typical Republican.
Yep.
So he's
well,
a
and it certainly is the data and information that the Republican Party has lived in and breathed for 25 years.
Yeah.
Is and the
now,
lying and the conspiracy theories and the fake news and the Pizzagate and the Benghazi and Democrats are evil and all of that is just what they swim in.
Vince Foster.
Yeah, Vince Foster. And that's where I want to go next, if you don't mind.
Yeah. Please.
Is Chris Jansing this morning was talking with a panel, and one of them was a former NSA employee. And she actually said, well, what can the Senate do?
Oh, they're so powerless. What can they do? There's not,
what can
it's
they
not
do
like it? There's a men. But I just, if only they had, like, articulated powers as mentioned in the Constitution of
yeah,
the United States,
exactly.
which they could use to address situations like this. But right. I guess that's just a false hope.
And in today's, to put an ironic maraschino cherry on top of that, in today's weekly address, which, by the way, is now highly produced by Steve Bannon's ad people. It's
yeah.
even got a soundtrack to it. It's got a violin soundtrack in the background of Trump's weekly address, which is 3 minutes long.
Does it have Donald Trump walking slow motion away from explosions? Because that'd be awesome.
No, but it has Neil Gorsuch, the camera over his shoulder as he admires Abraham Lincoln's portrait in the Oval Office.
Oh.
And an American flag hanging from the ceiling of this building where, you know, everyone's saluting it and how wonderful it is. And there's Donald Trump's voiceover talking about how wonderful the three branches of government are.
Yes.
But getting
yes.
back to Chris Jansing.
Well, I like the end of that commercial.
Yeah.
Which is Rex Tillerson standing on the side of the road and someone throws some garbage at his feet and one single tear rolls down his face.
But no eye contact, right?
No eye contact. No, no.
You're not allowed to make eye contact with Rex Tillerson, everybody.
No, don't look at me. Don't look at me.
All right. So, but Chris Jansing saying that, to me, underlined very clearly that Benghazi was bullshit. Because we have not had an actual, I mean, if Benghazi was for real, you would be able to actually say, okay, well, this is like Benghazi, where we have experience with congressional committees investigating and getting to the bottom of things. And so we know what's going to happen. We know how these committees work. But Benghazi was bullshit.
Right.
And so, and the thing is, Chris Jansing knew that. She knows that. She's known that all along. So paying attention to Benghazi was not about the investigative process. Which is boring and not televisable.
Right.
It's just about winners and losers every day, right? Who said what? How can we catch somebody in a lie? That sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
What you're getting, I think, and I think he's straight out of central casting, is with the House ranking member.
Adam Schiff of the
Intelligence Committee, Adam
right.
Schiff.
Right.
Straight out of central casting, here is this prosecutor.
Shift happens.
Shift happens. He is not flashy.
Nope.
He is not emotional. He is not. He can be angry without being angry. I think his committee is completely compromised. But Adam Schiff has done what needs to be done in terms of holding to account the truth of we have to find out what happens. So enough about that. All right.
Well, and there's a real interesting lesson to a parallel, I think, when you look at the House and the Senate side. The House looks like what the country looks like right now.
Mm-hmm.
It cannot govern itself. And it cannot govern itself because one group of people, represented by Adam Schiff and formerly represented by Barack Obama, just as avatars for that, would like to govern in a rational, reasonable, calm way. Sometimes I disagree with it. Sometimes I agree with it. But they would like to govern as people who respect of governance.
With agree to facts. Having agreed to facts. Right.
And then fight like mad over the outcome. Fight like mad over the principle. Fight like crazy over you know, what the purpose of government is. But then the other half of the country, more or less, is Devin Nunes and Donald Trump, who is a pathological lunatic liar and his stooges. And there is simply no way any honest journalist could possibly equate the two and look at them side by side and say, oh, you know, the real problem is both sides.
Mm-hmm.
There is simply no way. If you're completely dishonest, and if you're Matthew Dowd or David Brooks or Ron Fournier, completely sold out, completely hollowed out, soulless scum, you could look at this picture and say, really, the problem is both sides.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, the Senate, for a moment, I'm not talking about Mitch McConnell. I'm not talking about the theft of a seat, which just a moment. I'm talking about just this one little moment where the two heads of the Intelligence Committee agree that they're not going to step into it. They're not going to be pulled as distracted. That's sort of how government's supposed to work.
Yeah, and I don't appreciate the tongue bath that they're getting in the media for doing their job. I don't think that's right.
Well, it's been so long since anybody has.
Yeah.
Anybody on the right has stepped up and done anything other than just shame themselves and humiliate their party and fuck this country up.
Right.
And they're doing it every other day in the Senate. They're just doing horrible things in the Senate. They just voted to get rid of to trash Planned Parenthood, and the tiebreak vote was Mike Pence, who I understand his FBI, or rather his Secret Service code name is 46. So thank you, Don Fugel, saying that was very funny.
But that is very
funny. The basic model of how grownups are supposed to behave. Surrounded with you has been dead on the right for so long that they've just forgotten how to do it. They've forgotten how to even pretend to do it. They have all these sort of costumes in their closet. They don't know how to put them on anymore. So Donald Trump just walks around naked and says whatever the fuck he wants and does whatever the fuck he wants. And everyone rushes around behind him, cleaning up his poop, pretending that the big naked lunatic you see in front of you isn't really there and isn't really naked and everything he's doing makes perfect sense. And it's gotten so – this is why we can't be this country anymore.
Yeah.
The problem with this country is the Republican Party. And I lack the words to explain why it is desperately important to have a venue, a large public place, a large public audience place that this podcast certainly is and our listeners certainly are, but 10 or 100 times larger than this where we can say out loud – the problem with this country is that one of our parties is insane, and we have to stop them from being crazy, and we have to stop them from ingesting poison every single fucking day and calling.
Well,
it
and that's the groundwork, isn't it? That allowed the Russians to come in,
absolutely,
and start planting stories. Because as long as you are willing to believe anything that goes along with your narrative and your side, if all politics is I'm going to win and make liberals cry. And whatever is said about Barack Obama that's bad is got to be true. And whatever is said about Hillary Clinton that's bad is absolutely right. And therefore, sure, the Russians can come in and they've got their, like you said, patient zero is Donald Trump, right?
Right.
He has accepted every single conspiracy theory and belief about Muslims and belief about the economy that Fox News spews out. And Breitbart spews out
every
day.
And before it was them, it was Glenn Beck. And before it was Glenn Beck, it was Sean Hannity. Before it was Sean Hannity, it was Rush Limbaugh.
Yeah. And before it was Rush Limbaugh, it was John Birch Society.
They have been a constant, and they were a marginalized fringe element, and they successfully took over one of our two political parties, which is bad enough. The thing that really makes it unforgivable is how easily and readily the good conservatives, the smart conservatives, the true conservatives, the intellectual conservatives help them get away with it.
Well, even people who may in their day-to-day life not be conservative, but have a responsibility in the media to write headlines or to write Associated Press articles in the name of balance will say Washington made it okay to sell your internet history.
Which is not true. Republicans did that, not Washington. Granted that there's Joe Manchin and Heidi Heitkamp.
Mm-hmm.
Who, as I wrote this week, Lieberman is no longer a name, it's a title.
Yep.
Who will happily stab you in the back. But they've been stabbing the Democratic Party in the back for years. They're both right-wing moles. They're both hacks from, dead states or states, North Dakota and West Virginia. They both won the coin toss in their state. Heidi Heitkamp, apparently it was her turn to be senator. And Joe Manchin is the senator from West Virginia because someone has to be. And they are both absolute, reliable, backstabbing scum. And one of the advantages of wandering the wilderness and being an opposition party and being out of power should be the luxury to finally say, fuck those people.
Mm-hmm.
Those are not Democrats. Those are Republican moles. Those are Donald Trump stooges who are camping out in our party and fucking up everything they touch. You want to go be a Trump Republican? Go be one.
Yeah.
Get the fuck out of the party. We don't need you. We don't want you. Get your stink the fuck out of here. That's what we should be telling Joe Manchin and Heidi Heitkamp.
Yeah. Well, and I had an argument about this on Twitter with someone who was a good Democrat and wants what's good for America. I have no doubt. Saying, well, we have to be more pragmatic than that because we want a reliable vote for party leadership. And I'm like, wait a minute. Wait a minute. I didn't get into it with him, but I was like, wait a minute. We have two Democratic senators who are going to vote a lifetime appointment for Supreme Court.
Right.
To a person who doesn't deserve it, they are endorsing the theft of a Supreme Court nomination. I don't care if Mother Teresa is being appointed by Donald Trump to be on the court.
Right.
It is not Donald Trump's seat to fill. Period.
Right. And we're going to lose that seat.
And we're going to lose.
Let's be
apparently
clear about
we
that.
Are going to. Well, I don't. There are 30 Democrats now who are against it, who are for a filibuster, including our senators.
Mm-hmm.
So in Illinois. So.
Well, let's put it this way. I'm emotionally prepared to lose that
exactly.
seat. But there are some.
It.
This is one of those things that when Barack Obama went to his team and talked about health care.
Mm-hmm.
He said, this is something I'm willing to lose over. Mm-hmm. This is something I'm willing to get, get killed, lose a second term, lose reelection. It's important enough. This fight is and this fight isn't about Neil Gorsuch. This fight is about the Republican Party absolutely running roughshod over every fucking institution and a bunch of weak-willed, cowardly journalists in the Beltway who depend entirely on access to Mitch McConnell for their daily bread. Saying, well, yeah, it's wrong. Yeah, I get that. Sure, it's bad. But really, what can you do?
Moving on. We have to move on at some point. Yeah. No, we don't.
No, we don't. We really don't.
Yeah.
You had no problem with the Republican Party for 8 years dumping sand in the machinery of the federal government, shutting the government down, holding people's unemployment hostage, and then bitching that Barack Obama didn't lead enough. Well, you know what? How about this? Let's hold Gorsuch's seat open.
Mm-hmm.
And every time some fucking journalist out there, some halperin out there complains about it, let's say, why won't Donald Trump lead?
Yep.
Why won't he reach out to Democrats? Really, isn't it on him to reach out to the Democratic Party?
You're listening to the Professional Left Podcast, professionalleft.blogspot.com.
I want to pat myself on the back. Because at some point in the last 10 years ago or so, I pointed out that conservatism is a retrovirus.
Mm-hmm.
It is an absolute retrovirus that is wrecking our democracy and opening the door for a myriad opportunistic diseases. Glenn Beck is an opportunistic disease. Donald Trump is an opportunistic disease. The entire Republican running platform were opportunistic diseases, as was Limbaugh. Russia was an opportunistic disease, finding our immune system had been compromised by 30 years of Republican treason and lies.
Correct.
That's all it was. Correct. If our system had been robust and healthy, this never would have happened.
Correct.
And the people who lowered our immunity to craziness and fascism and lies are the Republican Party, and they need to fucking pay for it.
Yep.
And I'm not sure how in our weakened position we do that, but we do it, I believe, by never forgetting who's to blame for this.
Right. Well, and the people that have been interviewed about this Russian thing, who have lots of experience in Europe, have said that the reason this doesn't happen in Europe, the reason why the far right candidate lost in Holland, is because they look at that kind of material and say, oh, that's the Russians.
Yeah.
And they're used to it. They've built up an immunity, and they have contained their right wing crazy media to Sky News and to the tabloids. And they, and you know, sometimes it gets crazy to the point where Brexit happens, you know, and then you're in trouble. Mm-hmm. But and again, that was 2010.
Right.
The Brexit vote was just the 2010 vote. It was the turnout on the right side of history didn't turn out.
And they all said afterwards, I did what now?
Yeah. What's Brexit?
What?
Yeah. Okay.
What did I vote for? Yeah.
And it was Hillary Clinton's election loss as well,
yeah.
Which was all the polls said it wasn't going to pass. All the polls said Hillary Clinton had a 92% chance of winning. So
and she did. And
everybody,
she did.
And everybody just rested on their laurels and didn't worry. Well, I can go out and vote for Trump because she's going to win.
I can be pure and pure.
Yeah.
I can be pure and rare and pure and rare and bitch and moan and whine about and not perfect candidate. I'm not. What about this Jill Stein?
Here, good. Yeah, I'm going to vote for her. Right. Well,
okay.
That didn't work out for you. Hopefully we'll never make that mistake again. I think a lot of women voters will never make that mistake again.
That there you go. This is what really bothers me.
Mm-hmm.
We should have, most of us did, learn this lesson during the Bush administration.
Right.
Everything that's going on in the Trump administration is simply the Bush administration playbook, dumber,
Bush
louder.
Bush on steroids is what,
yeah,
Heather calls it. Yeah,
absolutely right. It's 100 times worse. It's happening 100 times as fast, but it's all the same dumb fuckery, just lying out our asses, the press rolling over for everything we say, everyone queuing up to blame both sides. Why can't you be a real American? Just bullshit. Just the same crazy bullshit. But the part that really bugs me is this. During the Bush administration and thereafter, the press at least had something that I call the Gingrich rules.
Yes.
And the Gingrich rules were, Newt Gingrich, as you know, hasn't held political power since Ally McBeal has been on television. And yet, for reasons that no one understands, except for network executives who don't talk to people outside of their little circle, Newt Gingrich gets to have a seat at the table anytime he wants to and say any crazy shit he wants. And he can go out and do crazy things and say crazy things and be a racist and a con man and a liar and a fraud. Mm-hmm. And occasionally, he goes too far and gets caught saying something obscene and racist and awful.
Like when he said Barack Obama has a colonial mindset,
yeah,
an African,
yeah,
colonial mindset. Yes, right.
Well, and he got, you know, deep up to his chinny chin chin in the Ground Zero mosque thing.
Right, right.
And he's, you know, he's an opportunity. He's a racist. He's a,
yeah,
big,
yeah,
loud,
Georgia,
vicious, racist fuckstick. Okay. And he's the father of modern Republican political hate speech.
Oh, yeah. He is responsible for that.
Absolutely. He's the guy who taught the whole party to do
this. If you've read Ornstein and Mann, you will find out that Newt Gingrich is responsible for why our politics is what it is today. Absolutely.
And Limbaugh. And this was true. This was acknowledged publicly, celebrated publicly back in 1994, which is starting to be a long time ago. So this is not news to anyone. But for reasons that passeth all understanding, Newt Gingrich always gets a seat at the table until he does something so offensive that he has to sit in Gingrich jail for 30 days.
Mm-hmm.
It's almost always 30 days. And then it used to be the practice that David Gregory would invite him on Meet the Press, never, ever mention the horrid thing that Newt Gingrich did that got him kicked out, and he'd be right back to where he was. And that cycle just kept repeating itself over and over again. And it repeats itself with all wing nuts. Everyone who feeds on the right wing, you know, wing nut welfare teat, gets this treatment. It's a rule. It's obviously a rule since it applies to everyone. But I thought, you know, George Bush and the Bush administration nearly wrecked this country. And the Obama administration desperately tried to dig us out of the holes that Bush put us in and made a couple of really big mistakes along the way. And I will acknowledge those mistakes. But by and large, did a pretty good job. Now, the Trump administration has arrived. It's pissed everybody off. It has just pissed in everyone's face. It's called every institution a fake. It's attacked the judiciary. It's attacked journalism. It's done everything. So you'd think that the reaction, just from a sense of preservation on behalf of journalists, would be to keep the Gingrich rules intact.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that maybe giving an open pass to the worst scumbags in America to go on television and say the worst things in the world is not really working out so well for us.
Mm-hmm.
And yet, what do I see when I turn on MSNBC? There's Steve King.
It was unbelievable.
Steve King is back in the mix. Isn't that exciting?
And it wasn't 30 days since he talked about white supremacy. Yeah.
It's not 30 days. It was a couple of weeks. Yeah. I turn on, I see Judge Andrew Napolitano.
Oh, he's back, and he's insisting that what he said that got him kicked off is still true.
Who was off the air for like 4 days.
Yeah.
Deadbeat Joe Walsh. Mm-hmm. Deadbeat Joe Walsh on Twitter saying monumentally, overtly, clearly racist shit. That the only reason that Barack Obama succeeded was white, and we lowered that he was black. And now I look at MSNBC, you know, liberal MSNBC. There he is. In fact, he's on a panel with Michael Steele and Hugh Hewitt.
Hugh Hewitt. Your liberal media.
That's my liberal media. And I go, no. And I escape to CNN. And look who's there. It's Joe Walsh again. So clearly there is some.
Who is he? Who is his agent? He's hired an agent. He's scraped together $5,000 of his kid's child support.
Mm-hmm.
And given it to an agent to get himself on television
repeatedly
to promote his radio show.
But it used to be that no matter how much money you would shovel into the booker's pockets,
mm-hmm.
you couldn't get back on, sat in the penalty box for 30 days. But let's face it, there is no one left on the right who isn't a scumbag.
Mm-hmm.
So they have like this, clearly there are reserved seats in the media for Jeffrey Lord and Hugh Hewitt and apparently Joe Walsh. And just the worst people in America. There are reserved seats at the table for the worst people in America. And now those worst people in America are all attached. Their boats are all tied to Donald Trump. And there's been this purifying process
mm-hmm.
whereby the worst people in the world just keep getting worse because they keep getting rewarded for it.
Yeah.
So while there was some subtlety about the racism of the Bush administration and some, hey, logic tricks involved in their lying. Now it's just blunt force trauma to your head. Fuck you, I'm lying. What are you going to do about it? Sure, mm-hmm. I'm a racist. Look at me. I'm jerking off to KKK magazine on camera. What the fuck are you going to do about it? You're going to invite me back on, aren't you? Of course you are, because that's what your boss tells you to do.
Mm-hmm.
That really is I'd hoped that our media wouldn't suck so bad when the threat was so big. But it does. And it does every day. And that's really troubling to me because, again, just from a sense of self-preservation, there is a rule. There is a business model. There is a plan. You remember that that little moment in Mr. Robot where the person who's about to go on television is negotiating what they will and will not talk about with the person who is going to put them on television?
They're negotiating.
They're negotiating how they're going to rig the interview so that you get access and I get TV time and neither of us walk away bruised.
Yep.
Clearly, I mean, this is I'm deducing in the absence of evidence, but I'm deducing in the absence of testimony, but I'm deducing on the basis of overwhelming evidence that this is how cable news works.
Oh yeah, this is how cable news works,
and that no one, even our dearest liberal friends, even under triple swear to God won't reveal it to anyone where I heard this, will not come out and say the reason fucking Hugh Hewitt is on the air is because Phil Griffin told me I had to put him on the air or I'm fired.
Right. The reason he's on also has something to do with NBC's ownership of some Hugh Hewitt property that makes Comcast money.
And the reason I'm not allowed to ask him the following questions about why he's a lying sack of shit is because that's the deal. You're watching a puppet show, and that's how the puppet show works. And occasionally we can slip in some truth here, but don't ever mistake what you're watching on cable for news, because it's not. It absolutely is not.
But you and I like to solve puzzles.
We do.
We like crossword puzzles. And
yes,
I liked how right after we were watching Legion. We were watching the season finale of Legion. And right after that, Junior Dude had two more math questions to do.
Yes.
And I had to explain to you how you factor trinomials, and you haven't done that in like 40 years, right?
Yes.
And it was fun. You and I had fun.
It was.
I had to describe this to you, right? And you said, so are we trying to come up with an answer to what A is? I said, no. We're not.
Okay.
We just want A minus B times A plus C. And, you know, factor out these trinomial numbers, right? But I was thinking about that later and how every once in a while you will get a glimpse of what's really going on. You'll get a glimpse of, like this morning with, you know, well, what can the Senate do when a seasoned NBC reporter who's been there for 20 years says, what can the Senate do? Mm-hmm. That is when you can plug in and say, you know, I've got this down clue and I've got this down clue.
Right.
And that means the across clue is.
Has to be. It has to be
Benghazi is bullshit.
Right. Right.
Because if Chris Jansing had known that who followed Benghazi, she was there, had said, this is a real hearing, this is a real investigation, they are really gathering data, their staffs are being paid to actually prosecute and find a solution to a problem.
Right. Govern.
Then she wouldn't be bewildered by what is going on now when there's clearly a real collusion, a real crime, a real idiot in the White House tweeting what the Russians want him to tweet.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you'd have that experience of, oh, I know what the Senate does. I know what these staffers do. They have all these documents and they have all these witnesses and they're going to come to some conclusions. And so coming back to Mr. Robot,
yeah,
your friend, Charlie Pierce,
yeah,
in the past hour tweeted,
yeah,
please tune in to the Sean Spicer show.
Yeah,
the writer's room really outdid itself with this week's episode.
And we did. I mean, again, we're filming this. We do this on video and we cut it down to audio because at some point someone's going to want to be. You know.
No, we don't.
No, we don't. We don't because I just don't look good on camera.
Oh, yeah.
I don't translate well. I'm not picked up by camera. But yeah, we're doing this on Friday for a whole bunch of reasons.
I think we're going to be doing it on a Friday from now on because Thursday night news dump. We never know. We don't want to miss.
No.
Then it's 6 days old. Everything that happened 6 days ago is no longer pertinent to the news of the day. Right?
I've noticed that. It's just that's right. And that's why I have taken to just adding to our podcast notes as the week goes on.
Mm-hmm.
Because so much shit is flying. I mean, just we could do an hour on Mike Flynn.
Yeah.
We could do an hour on filibustering Gorsuch. We could do an hour on Mark Halperin, who apparently just discovered the Democratic base exists, which is very exciting for him.
Mm-hmm.
But there is just a whole lot of stuff cruising at us at mock speed. Let's see. I'm looking through my notes. Devin Nunes, of course. Yes. Both siderism will not die.
Yeah.
David Brooks and Ron Fournier both were just awful this week, and they both have, again, paying gigs in the media. They both have a reserve seat. You want me to skip through these real quick? And
go right ahead. And then I want to talk about Mike Pence's marriage.
Oh, good. The Energy Department, your Energy Department banned the use of climate change on their website, which is exciting. Also, LGBT counting. We're not going to do that.
Yeah, no, not going to have statistics about gay people in the federal government anymore. Yeah.
And this is just what happened this week. Donald Trump declared war on both parties.
Mm-hmm.
We have to make war on the Freedom Caucus.
And I've got the clip of Donald Trump saying that he wasn't going to say mean things about Republicans anymore. Now that health care is over. We're just done with healthcare. We're moving on. And I'm not going to say anything mean about Republicans.
And then we just start the countdown.
Paul
clock.
Ryan is a great guy. Right. No.
2-1.
Yeah.
The Freedom Caucus screwed us. They screwed us all. They snatched defeat from victory or victory from defeat. He just can't help himself. And there's no one. And apparently the way the Republicans who run the White House, the little fascists who run the White House are coping with this problem is by making Jared Kushner the prime minister of America.
He's the prime minister. The very handsome, elegant prime minister of America.
America. Yeah. And he is now in charge of everything. He and his wife are now in charge of everything.
Mm-hmm. Except when Donald Trump has a phone at 4 a.m.
Right. And they're still keeping all of their business ties. They're still, you know, pimping their products.
Oh, and Donald Trump Jr. said he's now giving the president quarterly business reports.
Right. There was part of me, the bulk of me, which lives here and now in this moment.
Yeah, we have to because we have three teenagers in the house. Yes. Right.
But part of me also does try, as a science fiction writer and writer generally, tries to imagine what history will make of this moment 50 years from now, 25 years from now, when there's such a clear, a stark example of a political party who was hysterical over imaginary FBI probes of Hillary Clinton and imaginary crimes of Hillary Clinton and imaginary secret business dealings of Hillary Clinton. And, and so much so that they just could not bring themselves to even who are now sitting quietly on their fat asses in their double wides watching this giant, corrupt, lying moron do anything that they said that they thought was the worst possible sin an elected official could commit. Again, on steroids. Mm-hmm. You think Hillary Clinton had, oh, I'm just going to give the entire fucking country to my kids and let them run it and let them run it for profit. And I'm going to lie constantly. I'm going to lie publicly. I'm going to lie privately. I'm going to, half my staff is going to go to jail because they've been wired up with crooked Russian mobsters Russian government. Yeah. Yeah. And the entire Republican Party is sitting very quietly, sucking their thumbs and thinking that he's going to bring coal jobs back.
Yeah, right.
Coal jobs are coming back. So I don't need to worry about the rest of this shit because my coal job is coming back. Mm-hmm. And they are the problem. And I've heard a lot of people who think we should do outreach to them. I don't know how to do that.
No, I really don't. We can't. And the thing is, the same people who think that Donald Trump is actually – this is what I find funny. It's like you said, call it the Grand Falloon.
Yeah.
Define that again.
Oh, Grand Falloon is a Kurt Vonnegut word from Cat's Cradle. It's a proud and meaningless association of people.
Right.
Like Hoosiers.
Hoosiers, yes. Speaking of Mike Pence. But there is an association of Fox News viewers, of Trump supporters, of deplorables. And as we said many times, Donald Trump is their natural leader. The deceit that Donald Trump sitting down and signing a piece of paper is actually doing something.
Right.
That this is that, you know, they saw him on The Apprentice and he was actually sitting in that chair, being in command of that room and doing something on that show, on that scripted reality show that he was the head of it. Right. And they honestly believe that him signing an executive order doing something.
Right.
And so whether it has funding or not, you know, over and over again, Congress people have said, you have to get some funding for that.
Yeah.
Right. And it's just like the tweet. They're going to go back and take the executive order and try to reverse engineer some funding for the wall. Right. That this tells you why the budget is just pointless. The federal budget.
Well,
Republicans' concern for the deficit, Republicans' concern for a balanced budget is just all bullshit because Paul Ryan has said, we'll find $1 billion. We'll find $1 billion to put toward the wall, you know, make it so that Donald Trump isn't made a fool.
Right.
And Donald Trump believes that he's doing something. You know, this ceremony that they're going through, clearly Reince Priebus and Steve Bannon are making this happen and having this fancy folder for him to sign.
Right. It's
and
fancy.
And these pens, you know, and making it, look, you're going to play president. We're going to let him play dictator. He signed something and it's law, right? And the confusion this week on Twitter of Trump supporters about what the judge did when he turned back the Muslim ban.
Right? Muslim ban 2.0,
which made it permanent, basically. Right. It's now 6 months. We're just not going to do this. And Trump's lawyers asking the judge to not consider Donald Trump's speeches when it came to the motivation for the bill.
Right.
And the judge said, no, we're not going to pull a blanket over our head and pretend we didn't hear that.
Ignore what my client said in the detailed confession he made yesterday of his true intentions and just judge him on this lovely thing he signed today.
And I had to point out to some people on Twitter who, first of all, thought that now Muslims could only move to Hawaii.
It's true. It's absolutely true.
Yeah. I want to see how many Muslims Hawaii decides to let in because I think they won't let in any. It's like. You understand this is a federal court, right? Not in Hawaii. That's not a real place. Well, Barack Obama was born there, right? No, he wasn't. No, wait. And now they're fighting about that. But they really didn't understand, first of all, that the Muslim ban was over across the nation.
Right.
And they also didn't understand how a judge, to their mind, the judge was making the law, right?
Right.
Judges, and someone actually put up a picture of the three branches of government and said, this isn't fair. Courts can't make laws. And I looked at it and I thought, you realize which of the three branches does make the law, right? Which one is it? Crickets.
I used to know this.
It's Donald Trump sitting there with a folder signing a Muslim ban. That's who gets to do it.
Right.
And...
Well, this again plays the density here. Well, and this again plays to the habits that our Republican fellow citizens have fallen into over the last 30 years. They cannot break now. It's become doctrinaire to them.
Politics is about winning over a fight with imaginary strawmen liberals who are evil.
And there's a very important rule. Again, I told you about this moment several weeks ago when I mentioned that George Ryan had gone to jail.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And the people I was talking to looked at me like I'd cheated because they were busy, you know, bashing liberals and bashing Democrats. And, you know, Blago went to jail. I hear whole parties fall like I said, now, who was governor before him and what happened to him? And they looked at me like I'd broken a rule.
Yeah.
Because you're never allowed to mention the fact that the governor before Blago was George Ryan, who also went to jail. And they just
and he looked, was a Republican, just like Republican, Abraham Lincoln.
Just like you. So but the habit that these people have developed by talking only to each other, only to themselves, is that you're never supposed to be held accountable for anything you say or do.
Right.
It's against the rules. So if Donald Trump does something horrendously awful and lies today, the Republican rule is by tomorrow it never happened. Because that's how we play among ourselves. But now their leader occupies a position where he is being observed, their bullshit, the way they operate, is being observed by the whole world. And the whole world can see that, oh, these people are all crazy. They're all fucking crazy. They really do believe that what they said yet doesn't makes them look bad today. And that you're a bad person for bringing up such things. And that's where it falls to us to continuously bring this shit up. Mm-hmm. We have to bring it up every day. For example, by next week, first of all, do you think anyone out there on the right is aware that both Sean Spicer and Bill O'Reilly went after black women this week?
No.
Nope. I am. I sure as shit am.
Well, except that he was just being, you know, Bill O'Reilly. Yeah, people saw that because that was on Fox and Friends.
Right.
So that was just a joke.
He's just joking. By next week, it'll be gone. It will not register in their brains. Their brains do not hold on to embarrassing information. And let me restate once again for the record. They got addicted to do-overs. Yeah. They got addicted to do-overs after the Clinton impeachment. They got addicted to do-overs after 9/11. They got addicted to do-overs once Obama was elected because they all suddenly became independents. They suddenly became Tea Partiers. They'd never heard of George Bush. And we're watching the do-over happen again.
Yeah.
We're watching suddenly all the shit that I said, all the shit that Trump said, all the shit that happened for the last 60 days, none of that counts. And why can't we be bipartisan, Blue Gal?
Yeah, really.
Mark my words, bipartisan is going to be a big word over the next few months. And the only people who are going to be shooting up flags saying, what the fuck are you talking about?
Right.
What in the fuck are you talking about? Will be Democrats and liberals, because on the right, they will have completely forgotten the last 8 years because they've trained
them. And they completely forgot that the reason that they did the Obamacare repeal this time under reconciliation was so that they would not need a single Democratic vote to make it pass. That's the point. They didn't need a single Democratic vote and they still couldn't do it.
So, and speaking of never needing a Democratic vote, why don't you talk to me more about Mike Pence?
Mike Pence's wife. And how he doesn't have any meetings or meals or dinners containing alcohol with women present unless his wife is sitting right next to him.
Right, because he can't be trusted.
Well, because the evil vagina, which is the source of all depravity in the universe.
It says in the Bible.
Given your Old Testament teachings, you have to be protected from that, right?
You do, yes.
And a lot of people have been going back and forth about this, about do you judge Mike Pence's marriage? Well, Mike Pence judges every gay marriage that ever happened as being illegitimate. So, yeah,
absolutely.
And it's not about his marriage. It's about his relationship outside of his marriage with women and power. That's what it's about. And this Old Testament, you know, I'm not doing a Bible bitch this week. I'm just saying the Old Testament fundamentalist based on tribalism Christianity with a small C, not with a big C. Christianity right. with a small C, I'm all for. Christianity with a big C, meaning the church, the fundamentalist right-wing Republican church, is fundamentally misogynistic.
Oh, yeah.
It just is.
It's built on it. It's built on.
Built on it. There's only one woman that's any good, and it's the Virgin Mary, and right. she's it. She right. saves all other womanhood from the depravity that it is.
Right.
And so one of the things that I wanted to bring up again, I brought this up a few times over the past, 7 years that we've been podcasting?
Yes, we have.
When I lived in Alabama, after Bush was elected for the first time, I had a bumper sticker on my car from Sojourners that said, "God is not a Republican or a Democrat." And "God is not a Republican" was in large print, and then underneath in smaller letters said, "or a Democrat." I had replaced a John Kerry sticker with that bumper sticker after the election.
Mm-hmm.
That bumper sticker, "God is not a Republican," in Birmingham, Alabama, got more cold, hateful stares
mm-hmm.
than 4 months of John Kerry on the back of my car
yep.
put together. They cannot handle not having a tribal God
right.
who represents patriarchy. And that's what comforts me in a way.
Mm-hmm.
Because this is as old as the Old Testament. This fight that we're having right now is as old as the Old Testament. We have new challenges. We have new technologies. We have new opportunities. We have new hatreds. But it's the same old story. And one of the kids, I think it was middle child, brought up the other day. This was a funny story. She goes to, as do all of the children, a very racially diverse public school.
Mm-hmm.
And they were put into groups in her eighth grade classroom to do a group activity. And she, okay, this is, you'll think this is funny. She's in this group and she's talking to all of them. And all of a sudden, one of her fellow students in the four person group says to middle child, "That's racist."
Uh huh.
And then we go on, and she said, "I didn't mean it that way." Said, "Okay." And she goes on, and the next person says, "Only we can say that." And she looks around, and she realizes she's sitting with three black kids.
Uh-huh.
And they are shitting on her. I mean, yeah. They are just playing a game with
her. They're busting her chops, because she's
busting her chops.
She's a friend.
And she's a friend. But boy, they had her. They yeah. had her for 10 minutes.
Yeah.
You know, like, we're going to really get this little white girl. We're going to give it to her
yeah.
that, you know.
But it wasn't cruel.
It wasn't cruel, but it was like
friends, you know, ranking.
And it was, right, kicking her a little bit under the table. You know, we're going to, and make her aware.
Right.
I think was the point, you know, we have some power here.
Right. In a gentle way.
It was not
It's not the PC. It was not the politically correct. You know, it wasn't campus speech codes.
It was friends
teaching each other about
right.
life and vocabulary
right.
and where
right.
their feelings are and
yeah.
what, you know, what it means to be the other and
yes,
how things
exactly.
are perceived of when you're the
exactly.
other.
And they weren't.
Now.
They weren't. This wasn't even a social studies class.
No.
I think it was math. I really think it was math because they're doing their math this year. The eighth grade. They do a subject every year, and this year their learning fair is math. And she's doing the geometry of Angry Birds for this. You know,
yeah.
this whole thing. So I think they were doing their math project. But you know, the idea that you would be sitting there, it would make a great short film, wouldn't it? Just
yeah.
the kids sitting around a table like, "That's racist. You know, only we can say something like
yeah.
that."
Come on. No, you come on. Okay. But it wasn't a big deal. That's the point. It wasn't the end of their friendship. And
no,
it wasn't, and
it was something that she brought home to her mom.
Right.
Let me tell you what they did to me. And it was funny. It was
right.
funny because they were, like you said, they were joshing her.
Right.
Junior Dude and I attended Rodney Davis's Teleton town hall this
yes,
week.
Yes, you did. Teleton
I signed
exists.
Up online, and he called us, or his rotodialer called us.
Yes.
And Rodney Davis is our congressman.
who doesn't have the guts to hold a real town meeting.
Face-to-face town hall meeting.
Doesn't have the guts to do it. Won't do it. And let's remind people, Rodney Davis is one of two Congress critters who occupy the Springfield area.
Three. Yeah, Shimkus does a little bit of Springfield. He sort of juts in from the east.
Uh-huh.
He's mostly farmland to the east of Springfield.
Right. LaHood.
Ray LaHood, I think it is. Is
LaHood.
It Roy or Ray?
Ray.
Ray LaHood?
No, I'm sorry. Because his dad was a congressman.
Right.
And I can't, for the life of me, at this moment, under pressure, remember which one's which.
It's Congressman LaHood is the younger LaHood.
Right.
His congressional constituents office is the same office that
Aaron Schock,
who, you know, had the office in Washington decorated a la Downton Abbey.
Right.
Looks like he might get off, by the way. Aaron Schock's office, LaHood took that over. Okay. And there hasn't been any redistricting, so that is his district. And then Rodney Davis, who does the residential part of the downtown of Springfield and is the 13th congressional district in Illinois.
And the crucial difference between Davis and LaHood for...
Yeah, it's important. Yeah, go ahead.
If LaHood may be able to skeeze out of the repeal and fuck you support, the healthcare debacle, because he was very careful not to sort of go on record.
Right.
He was very careful to be hedge his bets, not say anything, because he knew he was playing a really shitty hand.
And you went to the
birthday party.
You went to the birthday party for ACA last week.
The Affordable Care Act.
And it was at his office, a small
but hearty group of people stood outside and did the protest.
I thought there were a lot of people there for midweek, for Thursday afternoon. I thought there were a lot of people there.
Cold, rainy midweek. Yeah, it was a respectable 40-person crowd. But he invited people in like five at a time, and he was on. Mm-hmm. You know, he was taking a vote, and that's understandable.
He was in D.C. at the time, but he spoke to them by phone, right?
Exactly. And he would, you know, if you're a constituent of his, and we're not, he would take, you know, three or four at a time.
Mm-hmm.
And
talk to you. Yeah. Yeah.
And at this rally, that's when we learned that the Affordable Care Act was being the Repeal and Fuck You Act was being radically altered. Even as we spoke, they're taking out all of this shit. They're taking out hospitalization. Taking out, you know, basically anything to do with women or vaginas or being sick is now out of the bill to make the Freedom Caucus happy.
And you'll be able to buy the cheapest insurance. You know, your insurance will cost $1. It'll be great. It'll be awesome.
You can buy it.
Yeah.
You put a quarter in the gumball machine and you get some insurance.
Right.
It's not worth shit, but you get to buy it and then you can say you have insurance.
Mm-hmm.
LaHood,
until you need it.
Until you need it. You didn't read the fine print, did you? But LaHood was able to sort of camouflage himself by not ever putting a fur foot down bill. He was able to sort of, you know, he's another Republican. They all should go. He's no better than any of them. He has no business representing.
There is a difference between LaHood and Davis. And I want you to tell about Davis's behavior versus LaHood, and then we'll talk about their districts, because their districts are different too.
But here's the difference.
And that determines their behavior.
Here's the difference. Davis is a deputy whip. And deputy whip, he had to step out and say, and take a big bite of that shit sandwich and say it tasted goddamn delicious. And what a great bill this was. And get out there and bend arms and bend elbows, and bend thumbs, and get people to vote for this thing. And don't worry.
Be on television saying it's something we should vote for, regardless of what's in it.
Phase two and phase three in the buckets, in the sucker buckets, you know, at some point in the future, we'll get around to actually insuring human beings and making sure you're not all fucked over. But for now, basically, we have to put a win up on the board because my boss, the president's stupid, says I have to do this. And basically,
my boss, Paul Ryan's reputation is on the line.
So I got to go do this.
And I'm a team player. And that's the point. Yeah.
And Rodney Davis is on the record as supporting this shitty, awful, merciless, kill the poor bill.
AHCA. He wanted to vote yes. He supported it on television.
Yeah.
You and I watched him on MSNBC say yes, I'm a yes vote.
I'm a yes man.
He said, oh, there's the clip that's going to go on the ad. You know, we're all set now. But the difference in the districts,
right?
And this is what I think is very interesting to me. LaHood's in a safe district.
Yes.
Okay. He's safe. And The point was that we wanted more unsafe districts.
Yes, we do.
Because then people like Davis, who know they have to ride down a middle of the road, will behave like LaHood did. Will
right.
say, you know, I really want to make sure these things are covered. I'm going to stand up to the Freedom Caucus because I have all these academics in my district who right. are going to vote, might be willing to listen to me if I behave myself, but if I'm going to go far right, I'm going to lose.
Right.
And what happened in this case was Ray LaHood, because he's safe, can be logical and say, look, insurance has to be insurance. And
right.
so I'm going to listen to the issue. And anyway, blah, blah, blah. You know, and until there's an actual vote, he didn't put his foot down. He didn't stick a foot in the pool.
Darren LaHood.
Until it was, yeah, Darren LaHood. To say, you know, is it acid that's going to rot my foot off or
right.
not? I don't have to stand in it, right? Davis, on the other hand, who will be fighting for his political life in 2018.
He certainly will.
Went after not the middle of the road vote. He went after Paul Ryan's pot of cheesecake.
Yes, he did. Yes, he did.
He will get unlimited funding from Paul Ryan.
Yes, he will.
Paul Ryan does fundraising all day long.
Uh-huh.
That's what he does. And he's got a pot of money from the Republican Congressional Campaign Committee that he gets to divvy out.
Right.
And that's why Davis is behaving the way he is.
Well, because he took a job as a whip.
Well, but we don't know why. I don't know why he got that job.
I don't either.
Did he get that job because he said, oh, Paul Ryan, I'll do anything you want?
That's a really good question.
And Paul Ryan went, yeah, you're stupid enough that you'll do whatever I ask you to
right.
do. You're
right.
a loyal, stupid person.
Right.
Or was it, we need to elevate this person to whip because we need this seat and we need this stronghold. We need to keep this particular district in our column. So we're going to elevate him to whip so that we can put him on TV more and
I got to believe it's his superior intellect and powers of persuasion.
He's not. No, he's a class of 2010 drift class. You don't get to do that.
He's a slab of wood. That's
there
what he
are,
is.
Well, and the reason he got elected was because he was on. And you and I talked about this, too.
Yeah.
He has the same background that John Ossoff down in Georgia 6 has of being a congressional staffer.
Yes.
Now, to Rodney Davis's credit, that means Rodney Davis knows a hell of a lot more about how a bill becomes a law.
Than the president of the United States.
Than president of the United States.
Right.
And so you said, you know, I have no problem with a Rodney Davis who has interned for this job as
exactly.
congressman.
Exactly. That's
what you're doing, right?
You apprentice to the job you'd like to hold. And I have no trouble with someone learning the ropes as a staffer mm-hmm. or as a campaign person and then moving right. into government. I know lots of people. Who got very I couldn't figure out because I was kind of naive about the way the world worked back in the day, who were like the scheduler, you know, or the body person or the contact person, the person who basically, you know, carries your notebook around with you.
Right.
Who's just on a straight line, but administrative support from a CEO or a deputy mayor or a mayor or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
That's the person who goes on to become the mayor.
Right. That's the person who John Ossoff was a congressional staffer for John Lewis.
Uh-huh.
So that's why he gets to run in Georgia 6 as a Democrat,
mm-hmm.
Because he knows the ropes and he knows lots of people because he's worked for Congressman Davis.
Yes.
Congressman Lewis. No, sorry. Getting my Davis Lewis here mixed up. So, yeah, I don't have a problem with Rodney Davis's
works.
Background
right.
being the person who gets to run in that seat. And given that it takes an investment from the party to put someone up for Congress,
uh-huh.
it should be someone that the party trusts.
Right.
You know, that makes sense.
That's basic political tactics. That's just,
but
you know.
Speaking of Rodney Davis and trustworthiness, just put a cap on this and then we got to go.
Yep.
I got out a piece of paper because we just had him on speakerphone and you press *3 to ask him a question and they never picked up our phone.
No.
I think we're on a list.
Yeah, you sure as hell are. Yeah.
I put down a hash every time he lied for the first 6 minutes.
Uh-huh.
And he lied 8 times in 6 minutes.
Yep.
He said he wanted the AHCA to go to the floor. He desperately wanted to vote for it.
Yep. Nope.
that he had tremendous concern that no one in his district lose any coverage.
That's a lie.
As a result of passing this bill.
Absolutely.
In any way, it should change nothing. Mm-hmm. On and on and on and on. Finally, after I got to like 8, 9, 10, I'm like up there. I just went, okay, this is ridiculous. I'm listening for lies instead of listening to what he's saying.
Yeah.
And I said, okay, I'm going to stop now. But if he mentions selling insurance across state lines, yeah. I win.
That's right.
Bing, 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 bing.
You won. We ate well that night.
We
ate like kings and queens that night because you won that bet with yourself.
I won. I went, touchdown. Yeah. So when you can predict what the next lie is going to be,
yeah.
It's bad,
yeah, it's
folks.
Bad.
It's bad. All right.
We have been at this too long.
We've been at this. Hey, let's go on and do another 7 years. What do you
say? Yeah, let's do it. I think that's an excellent idea. I think we should close this one out.
And Driftglass, one last thing. Junior Dude's been depressed this week.
Oh, yeah.
Real worried about the future, worried about the future of the country, and gotten really sullen about it. And sullen teen is something you're going to have anyway. But I had to give him a pep talk the other night and tell him something that I've read in Sun Magazine, which is optimism is a political act.
Spell that.
Sun Magazine?
Yeah.
S-U-N.
Oh, I thought it's a magazine for mothers who have sons or something.
No, Sun Magazine. Yeah, no, this is The Sun, S-U-N. Optimism is a political act.
Yeah.
Donald Trump will not be president forever.
No, he won't be president for another year, I'm pretty sure.
And there was a beautiful picture on Twitter the other day of Saturn photobombing the moon. And it was this picture of the moon, you know, in close up, taking over almost the whole picture.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, it's a telescope photo, of course.
Sure.
You could see great detail of the surface of the moon. But off in the corner in the sky is this little dot with rings on it. Woohoo! And I retweeted that and said, this is such a good reminder that our daily concerns are not the biggest thing in the universe.
No.
And so keep that perspective. And it's not as though we don't have to be concerned about this and fight and resist and every day look for a way not only to make the world a better place, but at this point, stem the tide of evil
Keep each other propped up. Keep each other, keep each other.
It's really important.
Lean on each other. Go ahead and lean. It's okay. Lean on each other. That's what each other are there for.
Yep. You and I have sat up at 1 a.m. with shoulder to shoulder, just talking and like, okay, we're going to be all right. We're here to fight another day. Let's go. Each week we post to our Facebook page and website an internet kitty sent in by you, the listeners. This week's internet kitties, plural, are Sirius Black and Sarah Jane Smith, two black kitties from the same geeked out household. We love those names. You got the Prisoner of Azkaban on one side and one of the Doctor's companions on the other.
Yeah.
So go and visit Sirius Black and Sarah Jane Smith at our website and Facebook page. You can send your internet kitty to us at our email address, proleftpodcast@gmail.com, where you can also write to both of us. Please feel free to write us. We love hearing from you. Be aware that if you write us at any of our addresses, we reserve the right to read your email or U.S. Postal Service. Go Postal Unions! Letter on the air, unless you say otherwise. Don't forget our gourmet coffee guideline. If you can afford to buy an espresso-based beverage for yourself, buy one for us. And don't forget our Amazon link at our website. We believe in buying local. We also believe in shopping Amazon with our link if your alternative is a big box store. And it is time to buy spring break stuff.
It is.
So,
it is.
If you're out and deciding you're going to go to a big box store, why don't you check out the Amazon link and see if you can shop that way. Hopefully if we have someone local you can shop from, but if you're doing the big box thing, come to our Amazon link instead.
Amazon sells kegs. Why not?
Yeah. I don't know about that. I've never shopped for a keg at Amazon.
I haven't either.
It wouldn't surprise me. Please share our show on Facebook or Twitter, and thank you for doing that. So, Driftglass, how are the Internet Kitties doing this week?
Well, Blue Gal, the Internet Kitties will tell you all about it once they've been given immunity.
Let's think about living.
Think about living.
Just think about loving.
Think about loving.
Just think about the hooping and the hopping and the popping and the loving, loving, loving. Let's forget about the whining and the crying, the shooting. Let's think about living. Let's think about life.
National F Podcast is recorded under a Creative Commons license. Copyright 2017, Driftglass Blue Gal Podcast.